It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me on this Sunday before Thanksgiving. I hope wherever you're headed this Thanksgiving week that you have a chance to spend some time in the outdoors with your family and friends. It's traditionally and has been, well, in my family and in even my parents' families before that, and I'm sure with many of yours, Thanksgiving weekend is a time when so many people go out in the field. It's when everything is happening, not only with the deer and big game and upland birds, but just to go have a walk in the outdoors. And for my entire childhood, on Friday night after Thanksgiving, we would head down to the Illinois River and spend the weekend duck hunting. It was often just duck sitting, or more appropriately, sitting in a blind hoping to see a duck. There were some lean years on the Illinois River during that time period. And I remember it well, though. I remember the cold. I remember the hot thermos of hot chocolate to keep me somewhat attentive to the fact that there were so few ducks in the air while I sat with my parents in a blind. So it's always been a very special time, and I hope you have a great Thanksgiving this coming week. I want to take a moment today to take you on a trip that I had unexpectedly experienced this week, which demonstrates why, if you spend time in the outdoors, magical things will happen. I was high in the mountains of northern Nevada, working with some individuals who were working on sage grouse, trying to understand what is going on with the sage grouse population. So we're at 6,000 feet, and I simply am going to entitle this show Moving Day. At 6,000 feet in the air, in altitude, and it's cold. High above us, at just after 11 o'clock in the morning, we started to hear the high-pitched calls of snow geese. This was Tuesday morning. It's moving day across the North American continent, particularly in the American West and Midwest. Millions and millions and millions, tens of millions of birds are picking up on the north wind that has come down through Canada, finally bringing the first really cold air to Canada. Canada's had one of the mildest falls ever, as has the northern part of the United States. And it began to change on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday morning, as often happens. The birds move after the front when the wind shifts to the north and the upper thermals can carry them. And snow geese came, and for two straight days, uninterrupted, 24 hours running, 48 hours continuous, snow geese came from the north, heading over the mountains, and heading to, in their case, they're heading to California, they're heading to Central Valley, they're heading up into the Klamath Basin. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of snow geese went over our head on those 2 days high in the mountains. And they flew not only during the day, they flew all night long. And the radar screens from airports across the country west of the Mississippi River all demonstrated these big blobs of birds. And so you think about the magic of nature. Here you are high in the mountains, the last place you expect to see a migrating flock of birds. And for 2 days running, they're high pitched, and snow geese have this incredibly, I won't do it on the air this morning, it might frighten some of you, but they sound sort of like ah, ah. They make this sound. And when you put hundreds of them in a flock doing that, it the sound carries such great distances. And so we're at 6,000 feet. The geese are probably 10,000 feet above us. So they're flying at 15,000 or more feet in a crystal clear sky. And for 6 hours from 11 o'clock till dark, we never were without the sight of snow geese. And then on Wednesday afternoon, when I came down from the mountains, I went to an area which is known to be a grand passage for waterfowl, in this case, more so ducks. And I talked to some individuals in a cafe, and they told me that for the last 24 hours, they had seen the same thing, migrating flocks of mallards and pintail just coming and coming and coming, and cranes and swans. And that evening, I went out and stood on a place where I could overlook part of the Great Salt Lake, and you could just see V's of birds moving south, southwest. And here in Illinois, we think about birds coming down the Mississippi. They come out of North Dakota. They come out of eastern Saskatchewan. They come out of Manitoba. They come out of Ontario. And they come south and they follow the river, and the Illinois River and the Mississippi on down to its, where the Illinois meets the Mississippi, and then they're following the Mississippi all the way to Louisiana. It's pretty much a directly southward or southeast out of the prairies migration until they pick up the river. In the west, they don't have a river to follow. They come down to some extent. They're coming down the Snake River, but that's really the only river that they can follow. And then they hit the mountains, and they have to go over the mountains. So they have flyways, which they've developed over millennia, to where they go over the mountains at the lowest points, these mountain passes. And it happened to be in northern Nevada. I was on one of these mountain passes, unbeknownst to me. From the sky, it must have looked like a mountain pass. To the geese, to me, it just looked like more mountains. But they have to cross over these mountains. So think about migrating, whether you're talking about warblers, a tiny little warbler, or a great big sandhill crane coming off the prairies down the Mississippi Flyway. They just have flat country. They just put the north wind at their back, and down they come, and they follow their ancestral migration patterns. They don't have obstacles like a bird in the western part of the United States. It's going up and over the Rocky Mountains to get to the Central Valley of California, to get to the coastal plain of Oregon. Those birds face a far more difficult migration, and also they don't have the buffet table set for them the way that, that birds in the Midwest do. And one of the reasons that snow geese are so successful now, and their populations are at the highest probably since evolution for snow geese, is because of the buffet table of agriculture that's been set for them coming down the Mississippi and Central Flyways. In the Pacific Flyway, they don't have that buffet table. When they leave the prairies and they leave the wheat and barley, which is not the same for sustenance as corn, they don't have much grain. They don't have any grain, and they've got to fly virtually nonstop into the mountains, into the Salt Lake Basin, and then over the mountains. So it just reminds you how special nature is, and to be out for 2 days, in this case looking for sage grouse and how they're going to be saved, which I'm going to talk about in just a moment, but being underneath the grand migration, the great migration, is something that doesn't happen very often in life. In the early 90s, some of you may remember, for those of you who were thinking about that or in the outdoors then, we had an epic early blast in very early November. I think it was 1992. And it was the largest recorded migration of birds ever since we've had radar. And it was such an early freeze with temperatures dropping to way below zero across Canada. And even in northern Illinois, temperatures went from the 60s early in the morning down to the teens at night. And for three straight days, the radars were jammed at airports with migrating birds on a migration that was unprecedented since we've had this kind of equipment. The migration we saw the other day did not rival that because it was a little later in the year, but the same effect. And for those of you who also maybe think about why you see birds one year and not the other in migration, in Illinois in particular, the wind has a big factor to play in what birds we see and in what numbers we see them. And before I go to the break, I'll simply say this. When we have a migration that takes place on a northwest wind, we have far more birds coming through Illinois than we do on a migration that takes place on a heavy northeast wind. And that's because the prairie breeding grounds, which are the cradle for bird life, have far more birds than the birds coming out of Ontario and Michigan. So when the prairies, we get a big northwest wind migration, the warblers and the sandhill cranes and the ducks, everything coming off the prairies get blown slightly to the east, southeast. And when they're coming on a northeast big migration, they get blown slightly to the southwest. So great years for watching birds on the Mississippi and Illinois rivers on Lake Michigan occur when we have a big northwestern migration flow coming off the prairies, not so much so when they come out of the northeast. This year in Illinois, we've had a big, big migration from the northwest, which is one of the reasons that we've had so many birds coming through Illinois in the past few days. I'll be back in just a moment with a comment on sage grouse and the Bureau of Land Management. And I think it could be a harbinger for maybe what's going to happen in the changing of wildlife management. I hope you've enjoyed my tale of watching literally just stunningly beautiful snow geese going over the Rocky Mountains on their grand passage. It was something I certainly will never forget. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and thank you very much for being with me. Sage grouse. What is going on with sage grouse? A species that in the Midwest, here in Illinois, we don't even think of sage grouse. We think of prairie chickens. Prairie chickens were at one point so abundant in Illinois when the settlers came that they were basically the survival food for settlers, and they were so numerous that they became great market fare for market hunters and game, and they basically helped feed a nation. And then their numbers, of course, went to zero in Illinois, and the only prairie chickens we have in Illinois are to preserve downstate. So the prairie state, as we call ourselves, doesn't have any prairie chickens left. Sage grouse, different story. The American West is covered with sage grouse, or used to be. And I've talked several times on the air about what's happening with sage grouse because it's one of the most critical issues that we're going to face in land management, and it's a conflict really between science and land users. The American West is big open country. Sage grouse primarily exist on federal lands. Sage grouse, very simple, sage cover. Think of sagebrush, think of sage grouse. So what's happened in recent years, over the last 15 years in particular, sage grouse populations have collapsed. They're at unprecedented low levels. And there's a huge conflict between what the science thinks is happening and what people on the land think are happening. So the people on the land who've been on the land, in this case, for generations, and I had the pleasure of spending a couple days with some of them earlier this week on this sage grouse issue, and it's come sort of to the forefront now because of the changing of administration in Washington and the hope that we'll have a change in policy on sage grouse. So the ranchers of the American West and many people who aren't ranchers believe the sage grouse collapse is very simply a product of several factors which cumulatively have been horrible. One, West Nile. West Nile disease, which got into the crow population of birds, as we've read and seen over the past 20 years, very much got into the sage grouse population. West Nile obliterates the bird population, and it almost wiped out crows. It's taken them almost 20 years in the Midwest for crows to come back. So West Nile hit hard. Combine that with many years of far below precipitation levels across much of the American West. So you had drought. You had West Nile. Then you had drought, which strained sage grouse populations because they did not have the water and the grass that they needed. And then you couple that with an explosion in the predator population, particularly bobcats, also avian predators, owls, hawks, eagles. The avian predator population in the American West is probably the highest it's been since settlement 150 years ago. So West Nile, drought, predators, both mammalian on the land and in the air, have put a devastating hurt on sage grouse in places where you literally would flush 600, 700, 800 sage grouse in a flock. Now you flush 20 or 30. That's what's happened. However, the scientists at the Bureau of Land Management and the Fish and Wildlife Service are focusing on oil and gas development and the fracturing of sage grouse habitat. There are vast, vast swaths of the American West where there's no oil and gas development, where frankly nothing has changed in well over 100 years. And I was in one of these vast environments earlier this week. There is nothing different on the landscape than there was in 1900, 1950, 2000. The difference is sage grouse are gone because of those factors that I just described. The Bureau of Land Management, however, is not playing ball with that idea. Instead, they are focused on limiting cattle usage in areas where sage grouse remain, believing that cattle and cattle usage are the problem, and overgrazing has caused the diminishment of the sage grouse population. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying you have a huge conflict between people and belief set of beliefs between people who are on the land every single day, cowboys, ranchers, and have been for generations, and scientists who've never or rarely been on the land and sit in offices. In this case, the outcome is going to have a huge impact on what the future of the American West looks like. If the Bureau of Land Management and the Endangered Species Act under it are successful in limiting cattle grazing in the American West out of the belief that cattle are the problem with sage grouse, you are going to have an enormous impact on the ranching communities in the West, on beef in general, on lifestyles. And what if they're wrong? What if the ranchers are right? And in fact, the problem with sage grouse is weather. West Nile, which has pretty much moved through the population, and the birds that survived are now are immune to it or be able to address the disease, and their offspring will. And it's the reality that we have far more predators, avian as well as land predators, on a landscape that looks the same today as it did 125 years ago. If that's the reality, why is not the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Bureau of Land Management focused on management of habitat and species within that habitat instead of trying to focus on restricting cattle? And I'm not sitting here being an advocate for the cattle industry. That's not at all what I'm doing. I'm simply saying that the people on the land say we have far too many bobcats. Bobcat populations have exploded since fur prices have collapsed. And you may recall there was a referendum in Colorado this just a few weeks ago that failed badly, which would have banned bobcat and mountain lion hunting. So we're looking at a situation where common sense people on the land are saying this is the problem. And scientists are saying, no, this is the problem. And the Endangered Species Act sits there in the middle where sage grouse continue to decline. It kicks in and then everything changes. Hopefully that won't happen, but that's the situation with sage grouse in the American West. And I know it will be high on the priority list of the incoming Director of Interior and the head of Bureau of Land Management. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And most of all, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.